You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are at the Waldtop Brewery in a blurry bit of North Yorkshire, or at least blurry to me, because I've had a tough day on the bike riding the inaugural World Championships. You see what we did there? Hey? Hey?
Yeah, everyone's been drinking Cycling Pod Cask beer as well afterwards. It's the Yorkshire Wolds, I'm told, and we did a 74-kilometre bike ride. We've got an audience in front of us of about 75 people. Hello, everyone. Hello. Quite a loud bunch. And all very competent cyclists. Everybody finished. I think everybody's here. Is there anybody not here who was outing the ride earlier? Lionel's only just here.
Anyone who didn't overtake me today, have a word with yourselves. You need to
really... a really competent bunch of cyclists. There was only one guy who came out with no inner tube, no puncture repair kit, no pump even, and he unfortunately, no tire levers, and he had three punctures. So just one idiot.
That was you.
It was me. I should say, so Lionel's here. Daniel Freeb, your first appearance at World Championships.
Very daunting. This is like virtual reality podcasting.
Welcome. Welcome, Daniel. Did you have a good day helping people fix punctures?
Well, you didn't have an inner tube. I didn't have a bike. I completed some of the ride, but without a bike. Ran the last
Chris
few kilometres.
Chris Froome style.
Correct, yeah.
Excellent. So, normally we catch up on what's happened in the racing today. Because Lionel and I were riding, Francois and Daniel were detailed to study the men's junior road race and tell us all about it. So if you guys would like to take that away, please.
And now on to Danielle.
Yeah. Lap by lap, please. Detail.
Well, Daniel was actually, we were in the car and we were actually trying to help people fixing their punctures. And while I was going out taking pictures, Daniel, I must say, was actually watching the junior race on his phone. So he knows everything. He even knows who won.
But I do know who won. A Scottish rider with a fairly dubious birth certificate are more attacked after 5 kilometres, attacked out the back. But the winner was Quinn Simmons. I know that. I know that he's American, and I know that he won the junior Gent-Wevelgem earlier this year. He was shoeless for part of the race. I think his shoe broke after, not today, in Gent-Wevelgem earlier in the year. And he pedalled barefooted, very much in the spirit of the Cycling Podcast World Championship. Pedalled barefooted for a few kilometres and then was given some spare shoes and won Gent-Wevelgem. And then today, I think, attacked on his own and, won fairly emphatically.
And any other medals awarded in that race? There was an American third as well. I noticed that...
It's coming from the man who didn't mention Alejandro Valverde for the whole of the Vuelta.
and there was a young British rider, Alfie George, I think it was seventh. We actually had him on the podcast briefly last night because I spoke to him after the UCI Junior Conference. So that looked like a strong performance from him. Who was second and third, Lionel?
Alessio Martinelli of Italy was second, and a good Yorkshire lad from America, Magnus Sheffield, was third.
That sounds like a great race.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our title sponsor. I've actually got a Rafa Yorkshire Collection cap here. I'd like to award this to somebody. It's very fetching, isn't it? The Yorkshire colours, blue and yellow. Who was the most charming peddler today? Who was the most stylish looking rider?
Well, I mean, I'd like
it wasn't
to nominate...
You, Lionel. No,
I was going to say, perhaps give it to the most overtaken rider, in which case I would clearly be the winner. But there was a chap who came to my rescue and gave me an energy gel. It was a Science in Sport energy gel.
Oh, even better.
Wonderfully on message. Can you make yourself known?
There you are.
Thank you very much.
There you
are. That was a lifesaver.
You win a Rafa cap, which you have to wear for the rest of the evening. So here we are. Well, we had Francois making his debut on the podcast at the World Championship last night, and we learned that it was only your second World Championship that you've been at. Daniel, you've joined us for the next couple of days. How many Worlds have you been to?
I did Lisbon 2001, Verona 2004, Madrid 2005, Stuttgart 2007, 8, 9. I've done about 7 or 8, I think.
You definitely had Florence.
Florence, Ponferrada.
Mm-hmm. We were in Florence together, I remember. So you haven't experienced Harrogate yet and all that it has to offer, but we're sort of going to look ahead tonight to the weekend and the road race. I mean, tomorrow's the under-23 road race. We're probably going to miss most of that as well because we've got a show tomorrow night in Harrogate. But what are we thinking about Sunday and the men's road race, Francois?
It's funny because ever since we arrived in this beautiful place, very welcoming, and, well, you know, everybody's been buying me beers, as you said, and everybody's also been asking me that question, who's going to win on Sunday, which is the sort of question that normally we'd never answer on the podcast because we're serious people. We're not making lame, you know, pronostics, as we say in French. So I won't make a lame pronostic. I told everyone here, everybody who asked me, that Greg Van Avermaet would win it. So let me elaborate on that. I'm taking a risk there because obviously if he doesn't and as many chances he won, I'll look a fool. But I don't mind. I mean, this part of the game. So why Greg Van Avermaet? Because it's a long course, and it'll be, as we all know, a kind of a battle of the old generation against the new generation. We've seen that cycling in the last couple of months evolved considerably. The younger generation coming up, all the names, Evenepoel, Egan Bernal is not here, but I mean, all these guys, you know, under 22 guys, you know, kind of stealing the show. So have the old guys anything left, you know, in their in the tank to win the Worlds? I think that given the difficulty of the course, given the length of the course, I mean, some of these guys, I don't think Van der Poel ever rode competitively over 200Ks. So it'll be, different from...
Corrections corner.
Point of order. He won Amstel Gold in April, which is
about
250.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, it's the same.
Just
same
a crit, really,
but
isn't it?
it's the same.
Beer race.
It's the same with Alaphilippe. I mean, there are guys like Van Avermaet. He's done these races over 250Ks more than 20 times in his career, so they have the experience. They know how to pace themselves. The weather will be terrible, as we saw in Rio. The only guy who didn't crash was Greg Van Avermaet. The Belgian team is absolutely massive this year with Gilbert getting the same experience. So the only thing you could tell me is what you're saying about Van Avermaet applies to Philippe Gilbert as well. Right. But I have to pick one of the two. But so strong team experience. And the other thing is Gilbert rode a lot, and I think Van Avermaet is kind of held back a little this season. He didn't have the results he used to have even in the Tour. He didn't really go for stage wins. My impression is that he was really building his season up to World Championships he really thinks he's going to win. So all these little things put together, make Greg Van Avermaet to me a logic favourite. And so I talked a little bit about the others. I don't think Alaphilippe will win it because the French team is not as strong as it could be. And for all the reasons I said, Alaphilippe probably rode a little bit too much this season, started very early, did a lot during the Tour. And apart from, winning Milan-San Remo, he's never been at his best in the longer distances. Compared with Van Avermaet or even, you know, some of the more experienced riders, I think it'll be the key on Sunday. So that's my tip.
You mentioned bad weather. I mean, in the week we've been here so far, we've learned that the Yorkshire weather forecast are, well, not terribly accurate. I mean, today was supposed to be worse than it actually turned out to be. I was playing darts with a Belgian TV journalist called Renard Schotter last night, and he...
Was that rained off?
No, that was fine. That's fine. Play darts indoors, Richard. And he was saying that in Belgium, on the national broadcaster, the number three weatherman got a go doing the weather yesterday. And to make a name for himself, he's predicted howling gales, crosswinds, storms on Sunday, and it's become like a big story in the news that the road race is going to be a real kind of Flandrian fest in the weather stakes. But the rumble is that he's basically just said it to make a name for himself, moving himself up the weatherman pecking order.
But if he gets it wrong, and I don't want to go on a tangent about weathermen, but you know, if weathermen then get it wrong, surely they slide back down the pecking order. Look at Michael Fish.
Talking to Belgian journalists, I'm tipping Bob Jungels because...
What?
Because a good friend and colleague of ours, Hugo Kurwitz, who is one of the longest-serving journalists in the sort of cycling press pack. He's not necessarily renowned for his speculative capacities. I'll give you an example to illustrate the point. There was one day in the Vuelta in Oviedo, we were standing in the press tent behind the finish line, and... punctually every 10 minutes for the last hour of the race, he would nudge me and go, Freebie, Van der Sander, pay attention, Van der Sander. And then it would, 10 minutes later, it'd be another Lotto Soudal rider. And he ran through the whole roster in the course of it, Freebie, pay attention, Jasper de Boost. I don't think Jasper de Boost was even riding the Vuelta. Anyway, Hugo said to me the other day, Freebie, pay attention, Bob Jungels. So Bob Jungels is going to win the world.
Well, was he paying attention in the time trial? I mean, Bob Jungels was way off the pace in the time trial. He finished well down.
I wasn't paying attention to the time trial. Was he really that far off the back?
Yeah. And you can't really be off the back in a time trial, can you?
It depends.
Yeah, and once again, I'm not sure Hugo is the best, as you say, for tips. I mean, he's well known to all the press offices in all the races on the planet, because he's the guy who's closing down the press room every day at 10 o'clock in the evening, you know? So, I don't know.
Bob Jungels, I was surprised because, ordinarily, you would have thought both the time trial and the road race would suit him if he was in good form. But he seems to... He's such a strong kind of spring classics campaign, and he's been really off the boil at the Giro and ever since. Don't know what's up with him.
Have you chaps been out on the route? Have you got a good grasp of what it's going to be like? Because, I mean, altitude meters, which are not a particularly good guide or anything, it's about 3,500 meters, which would put it somewhere around kind of where Madrid was. Madrid didn't really have a big climb either in 2005. Tom Boonen won that. There have been a few that have been there or thereabouts, 3,500. It's kind of mid-range.
And I don't think it goes up as high as 2,000 meters, does it?
No, it doesn't. But the unusual thing about this Worlds, I think, is that there is no flat road, really, is there? And I think it's just it's dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of small accelerations, which, you know, is why people, one of the reasons why people are saying Van der Poel is the hot favourite.
Is he the hot favourite? I mean, what do you think, Daniel?
For that reason, I mean, you know, deferring to people who know better than me, I would say that yes. I mean, there's the uncertainty is his lack of kind of pedigree in long races. And I think, you know, you go over 250 kilometres, 260 kilometres. We see Milan-San Remo every year. It's a strange finale. You get guys sprinting or showing abilities in sprints that you don't know they have. Other guys who fade badly after 260, 270 kilometres. And we don't really have any reference points over those distances. So it could be something completely different from what we expect.
Yeah, I talked to lots of old riders, like Charlie Mottet used to tell me, it's the same as the third week in a Grand Tour, or it's the same as altitudes over 2,000 meters. There are riders, there is a level past 250 or 260. I mean, every rider has this limit when all of a sudden he peaks and it's finished. And I don't think we've seen that very, very often with Van der Poel. And the thing as well, the important factor at the World Championship is all the time is we saw last year with Valverde, who really worked hard preparing for the climax of his season at the Worlds, is really, I think some of the riders really, pace themselves to get, to make the Worlds their objective. You've got end of the season riders where Michael Matthews is one, who's always in top shape at the end of the season and sometimes not so much before. So you have to take all these things into account. And for these reasons, I think, of course, on paper, Van der Poel if he doesn't win it this year, he will win it in the maybe two or three times in the next 10 years. But this season, for me, maybe a little bit early. But I got it wrong so many times with young riders in the last couple of years. I mean, we've seen these young guys being so exceptional and extraordinary that we don't know, actually. They're kind of changing the rules.
But Van der Poel won three stages in the overall at the Tour of Britain. He was really impressive. One particular day, I think it was Kendal, 173 kilometres that was. I'm making this sound like, you know, this is coming off the top of my head. It's on my laptop here. that's how the podcast works. But do you lose that kind of acceleration, that jump 100 kilometres later? I mean, I get, obviously you do, but, you know, you're still racing like against like. It wasn't like he was, you know, he's beating Matteo Trentin and people like this.
Matteo Trentin is a name we shouldn't forget. But, I mean, it's funny because there was a dispute when the Canadian races were launched that seemed to be in the minds of the riders two ways to prepare for the Worlds. One was to do the Vuelta because you have the mileage, or go to Canada because they're the same kind of races, circus races, long races over 230 Ks, and it is one of the other. I've never heard the Tour of Britain being an alternative to prepare for the Worlds, but why not?
Kwiatkowski, I think, rode the Tour of Britain. The year he won the World.
Period when some riders did do well after having ridden the Tour of Britain. Yeah.
And I also think it'll be more of a factor. I mean, we kind of know that British roads are slightly different to European roads, and having ridden the Tour of Britain, they'll be the sensations, as the Dutch say, will be top.
But good point.
I mean, Van Avermaet also, don't forget, has ridden very well here in Yorkshire, hasn't he, at the Tour of Yorkshire, he's definitely somebody capable of it, and that Belgian team may be an advantage or a disadvantage, who knows. But There are so many. So, haven't even mentioned Peter Sagan or Alejandro Valverde, of course. He's come out the Vuelta, second at the Vuelta. Now, we saw what toll the Vuelta took, I think, on Primoz Roglic the other day in the time trial. And it was a very, very, very hard Vuelta, which I don't think a lot of us appreciated watching it. But the Jumbo Visma released some of Roglic's data from the Vuelta, and it actually was harder than the Tour last year, harder than Giro this year for him. So it clearly affected him in the time trial, and it might have a similar effect on other guys who finished the
Gilbert.
Cycling podcast, team car, back of the pack, please.
That was not the voice of Seb Piquet on race radio at the Tour de France.
That was the gentleman who replaced Rich's hip.
It was. This man removed my leg a few years ago.
He put it on
and reattached it.
He reattached it, okay, because, you finished in front of me today. Anyway, this episode is sponsored by Harry's Razors. Harry's have a special offer for Cycling Podcast listeners, and they're offering a trial set for £3.95. All you have to do is go to harrys.com/cycling. That's harrys.com/cycling, and you'll get you'll get everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. The weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. And as you'll tell from my sort of scruffy, unshaven demeanour, I'm not a Harry's
stranger
customer
to Harry's Razors.
But you're a regular user, Rich.
Excellent razors, and I'm not doing a sales job because I have a trial set here. This is the trial set you would get in the post. And I'm going to give it to the other very helpful person today who gave me tire levers. Is he here? Identify yourself. You were riding a BMC bike, a rental bike.
Does he have a huge beard?
No.
Was it Rowan Dennis?
No, I could see the transfer. Where are you? Are you here? Can someone pretend to be him? Somebody who likes razors.
It's probably still on the course, actually.
Oh no.
He's
punctured and he can't get his tire off.
He's had a puncture.
Okay. You've got a very... You look like you're a regular shaver. You can take advantage of this. Thank you very much. Thank you. Enjoy your Harry's razor set.
And you can all get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95 by going to harrys.com/cycling.
Before we carry on, I'm going to actually ask Jenny from the brewery to come up.
and tell us a little bit about this place and about how this event came about. So while Jenny's making her way to the stage, it was a great event, wasn't it, Lionel? You know, we were talking about the length of the road race on Sunday and how the distance might affect people's legs. I think we can all kind of relate to that, having struggled up the climb here to the finish.
I would say, 74 kilometres here does feel like 100 kilometres elsewhere.
A fair comment.
How fast the neutralised zone on Sunday? Isn't it the longest ever? Isn't it about 18 kilometres?
Yeah. I think it is. Yeah,
it takes the overall distance over 300.
So we've been joined up on stage by Jenny from the brewery.
Hi.
Jenny, tell us about this place, please, because it's wonderful. It's in the middle of nowhere, up a hill. We know that. It's up a hill. And it's we're in a marquee, which looks like it is fitted out for weddings. And there's a bar next door, and we've just eaten some lovely food, and it's a great setup, and the beer's very nice as well.
Well, that's always a good thing. So this is the Walltop Brewery. We are a farm-based brewery. It's grained glass, so we grow all our own malting barley. We don't grow our hops because the Yorkshire climate isn't very conducive to good hop growing, even though we've tried quite hard in the past. It's been around since 2003. It's a family business. My dad set it up with my mum back in the early 2000s. My sister and I have worked here since we were teenagers. She's continued to work here the whole way through. I had a bit of a sojourn to London, and now I'm back again working here as well. So it's a proper family business.
And you made contact with us quite a while ago, actually.
I think it's this time last year. It was listening to you and Ola talk. I think you had looking forward to the world podcast, and I'd been listening to that in the car, and I'd already been thinking, how do we manage to make the brewery have something to do with the world? Because we're a little bit far away from Harrogate, as I'm sure a few of you have noticed from driving over here today, because Yorkshire is quite big. I think people forget that, but it's a pretty big place. So we're about an hour and a half from Harrogate. So we're trying to work out how do we do something connected to that. And as a brewery, we're really into cycling. We sponsor a local race team. We have a sportive that runs from here every year. So Dave, who heads up the local race team, he's here wearing his kit very proudly. They're called Walltop the Edge, just to give a bit of a shout out to them. And as a family, we're really into cycling as well. So it was trying to work out how do we manage to do something that can kind of help us, but also be interested in the world. And actually, the podcast seemed to really make sense. So we got in touch, and you suggested a ride, which worked perfectly.
Yeah, we'd been sort of talking, hadn't we, Lionel, about organising some kind of event ride, and this seemed like the perfect solution. Here we are.
Well, it's been the perfect solution. I mean, what more do you want? I mean, bike riding and beer go perfectly together, as far as I can as far as I can see. So, yeah, why not? It's been a great day. It has been quite challenging for me because I've not been doing a lot of cycling this year. But it was a relief to get round. And a shout out for Andy Mackey of La Corsa and Jimmy McCullum, who
McCallum. You've been listening to Hugh Porter on commentary.
Is it
McCallum? Used to always call him Jamie McCullum.
Well, it's kind of Scottish pronunciation.
Pronunciation police here. James McCallum, yeah. James is a former professional rider, Commonwealth Games bronze medalist of 2006, national crit champion as well a couple of times.
And, well, they plotted, I thought, a great route. I mean, I was really surprised by how quiet it was out there, and the quality of the roads was great compared to where I do a lot of my cycling. So, yeah, all in all. And we got lucky with the weather, didn't we, given what it could have been.
So thank you very much, Jenny. And your Queen of the Mountains is safe up here, I think. I'll have to check that.
I checked it. It is.
Oh, great. But we do have...
Can I just ask, is this actually a private road that comes up here?
Yeah, it is
and
a private
did
road.
You set
and
up the Strava
segment? No, I didn't. I actually didn't. Some one of the guys that works at the brewery, a few of them ride up and down most days to work, and a couple of them set it up.
Well, while we're talking about the King of the Mountains up here, it is a sticky old climb up here, isn't it? But some of you are on Strava, and we were able to check the times. And so we actually have a tie for first of the men, which is unfortunate because we've only got two prizes.
Well, why don't they go and do it again now?
Yeah, that's a great idea. It's tough, deceptively tough climb that. And it was
the fastest up there was, let me just recall, Richard Moore, actually, was the quickest up there. Well done, me. No, there were two joint winners, so I don't know how we're going to decide this.
Can we not source a third prize?
Giving them all away now, Lionel. The Harry's Razor set and the Rafa cap.
What is the prize?
Simon Harrison and Danny Murray. Identify yourselves. You're Simon, Danny, both of you. 134. And Jane, you were the fastest woman. Can you give me your surname, sorry?
Wilkinson.
And you are Irish Masters champion, is that right?
Yeah, TT. Yes.
Still not bad.
Yeah.
What are the prizes? What were the
intended
prizes? These are
beautiful Stacey Snyder mugs.
Well, I can step in here and offer a third mug, as we have a spare.
Really, do we?
I have a spare.
Oh, okay, great. Well, Jane, would you like the one with the one big bike or lots of small bikes? Very certain about that. There you are. Thank you. And, well, one of you will get... who was it? We'll get a mug to you as well. Oh, what a generous chap.
Well, we'll get your address and we'll send you the third mug.
Okay. Thank you, Jenny. I knew you'd forgotten something, Jenny. We're in the bar now after the event, and you're offering Listen to Second Podcast some money off some of your Wold Top Brewery beer.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to Wold Top Brewery, so that's Wold with no R in the middle, because it's woldtopbrewery.co.uk, go into the shop, choose anything that you want, and put in the code CP10, and you'll get 10% off any purchases.
And you do a cycling beer, don't you?
We do. It's called Hello Velo.
Daniel,
yes.
Previous worlds then, any favourite world stories that you have in your locker? Come on, you've seen it all. You've been to more worlds than all of us put together, I think.
World stories?
What's been your favourite of all the ones you've been to?
Well, I think it's great when the worlds, I think as you said earlier, it's great when the worlds feels like it takes over a town. It tends to get lost in big cities. Madrid, it felt like it was stuck out in the suburbs, even though it wasn't. It was kind of in the centre of town, but people don't really, you know, pay too much attention when it's in the capital city. But by all accounts, Harrogate, it feels like it's really sort of taken over, no?
Yeah, Harry. I mean, you're going there tonight. Innsbruck last year felt to me like the sort of perfect size. Florence was good as well. There was a real sense of history in Florence. You know, all the kind of shops with the pictures of, you know, Coppi and Bartoli in the windows and so on, especially Bartoli because he's from Florence, wasn't he, or nearby. And Innsbruck as well last year is a slightly bigger city, but it really did feel like the worlds were the main show in town and you couldn't avoid them. And in Harrogate, certainly that's the case. The one slight disappointment is that I think that they've been very keen to take the races all over Yorkshire, and as Jenny says, it is a big place. And so I think one of the things that I love about the Worlds is the fact it's a circuit race, and it's a great experience for spectators, and it produces a particular kind of race and racing. And I think here there are some races where, you know, the under 23 men's road race tomorrow is now just two laps of that circuit, and I would have liked to have seen the racing more concentrated on that circuit.
I was talking to Francois earlier about, he's only done one Worlds, as you said earlier, Chambry in 1989. We were talking about a rider who kind of came to prominence in Chambry, Dmitry Konyshev. And this what you were saying there reminds me of a conversation I had with Konyshev a couple of years ago. Konyshev was this kind of Russian playboy, sort of, he was reputed to be quite lazy, and I think by his own admission was quite lazy, very talented, but got a reputation as a bit of a lady killer, a bit of a sort of a playboy. But he said to me that he loved the Worlds and he always overachieved at the Worlds, basically because he didn't have to concentrate, because you didn't really have to pay attention to the route because it was on a circuit. Once you'd done it once, you kind of figured it out and you could just sort of go to sleep until the last lap. But it's funny, like some riders really thrive on that format, the sort of circuit races, and to a disproportionate extent. I mean, I remember the French rider, I mean, you know, he didn't win a Worlds or even, I think he won the French championship once, Arthur Vichot, was always great at circuit races, but not so good in more conventional races?
It was the best for very, very, very long time. Vishal was, yeah. I mean, in Canada, I've always loved actually circuit races, and I'd agree with you on that. You know, for a long time, the words were kind of criticized by the cycling press because it was over one day, and how can you, tell a guy's a world champion on just a one day race? But as we saw from the past now, I mean, it's always a great rider winning it. And this format of a circuit race, I mean, in my opinion, in the cycling calendar, there's not enough of them. There's only apart from the Worlds, there's only the Canadian races. And it's a format that's very popular in North America. And it would be really exciting. And I know they're working on it. If they had a World Tour circuit race in the U.S., I mean, it would be... I mean, I know that, you know, towns in the U.S. and the organizers of the Canadian races are trained to have one there. But as you say, it's great for the public when you have 16 laps and you know, in a town, it's a great publicity for the town and for the area. For the public and the kids, it's great. You can even move from time to time, from spot to spot, and see various places of it. So Arrogate and the way the course has been set up is ideal in this type of format. And as you said, the way of riding it is different. The breakaways don't have exactly the same impact. I mean, they do have, but the tactics of the circuit races are a little bit different and interesting as well. It's really a kind of wearing out process, you know. If you look at the big circuit races, at the end of the race, it's very rare that you have a bunch peloton finishing. It's usually either a couple of guys have gone or a very small group of riders finishing up, which proves, you know, how demanding this format is, especially over a long distance. So yeah, great races. Arrogate seems to me, from what I've seen of the course, to fit the format ideally. So we should have a really, really exciting race on Sunday.
Just on circuit races suiting some riders and not others, it's also a psychological test, because there are multiple opportunities just to put a foot down in the pit zone or at the finish line. Not a world championship level anecdote this, but I do remember the Linda McCartney team rode a race called the Route Adelie about 20 years ago, and I sat in the team briefing, which was being given by Sean Yates, the sports director, and Matt Illingworth was kind of just looking at the profile on the sort of PowerPoint or whatever equivalent it was back in those days, and kind of you could tell from his body language he wasn't relishing it too much. And, you know, yeah, we come in from there to there, and then there's 14 laps, and Illingworth said, oh, love races like this, 14 times past the hotel.
Well, that's exactly... In Quebec, it was even worse, because the riders are all accommodated at the Chateau Frontenac, which is probably the best, the most prestigious hotel in North America, and the circuit goes absolutely across the hotel, meaning that you didn't really... You saw many, very often, a rider, you know, lap 12 or lap 13, you know, go straight back to his room, you know, on his bike. So, I mean, yeah, that's part of the charm of it. I agree. But the other part of the charm of it, if you don't like the slight little bump that's all right in the first couple of laps, then, you know, you've got 14 more of those coming. So there you are.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport. Fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off at scienceandsport.com with the code
SISCP25.
Very well done, SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. A lot of Science and Sport products consumed today, everyone?
Yes.
Tom, can you kind of cheer that sound effect up a bit?
So the other race of the weekend, well, we've got the men's under 23 championships tomorrow night. Well, finishing at 6:30 now, with two laps of the finished circuit. The women's junior race in the morning. Not going to ask you all for your tips for the women's junior race, don't worry. But the women's race on Saturday, Francois, any predictions? We covered this in the cycling podcast Femina earlier this week. Of course, Rose Malley and I looked ahead to it.
Yeah, of course you did that, and it's a good opportunity to remind, you know, our listeners that, you know, to know everything you need to know about Saturday's race. You know, go for the Cycling Podcast Femina. No, I had a question. I don't have any certainty, but we lots of us thought before the women's TT time trial that there'll be another Dutch sweep of medals, and it looks like it might be the same. But it didn't happen. So the question is, can we avoid a Dutch sweep of medals in the women's race on Saturday, guys?
Well, the big question with the Dutch team is, are there too many chiefs and not enough Indians? Because they've got just about every rider in their team could win the race, potentially.
It's amazing. They seem to always avoid... correct me if I'm wrong, but there haven't been any worlds or even European championships over the last few years that have been where they've really fallen out. Or, you know, I mean, for a nation, the Dutch, there was a time in football, for example, when the Dutch were absolutely notorious for having a lot of sort of strong personalities in the dressing room and never being able to get on. It's quite amazing that they seem to be able to marry a lot of these interests.
Last year, there was a lot of chatter before the road race about who would be the leader, Van Vleuten or Van der Breggen, because the course was so hard that it suited both of them kind of equally. And that was resolved by Annemiek van Vleuten crashing and injuring her knee. She hurt her knee very badly and still, I think, finished seventh on the day. But Anna van der Breggen won it. She absolutely demolished the field and won it on her own quite easily. So the question didn't really arise then. But that was a big question last year. And it could be a question again this year. And the opportunity could be there for one of these other riders, because the other favourites can't sort of mark every single Dutch rider. So a group could go clear with an Amy Peters or Demi Vollering or somebody. But Marianne Vos is probably the favourite of all of them, you know, and especially if it's a small group. And it's funny because, you know, Van der Breggen, Van Vleuten, Vos, they all ride for different professional teams. They all want to win it, but they would all have to win it in quite different ways. So how that plays out is quite interesting, because obviously if Van der Breggen gets away, then Dutch team aren't going to chase her.
Do you know anything, Rich, about the conventions? You know, we know in the men's scene, well, particularly with certain nations, the Italians, for example, have quite a well-drilled and a sort of time-honoured protocol of the federation puts up a bonus. The trade teams put up bonuses, and there's a conversation on the eve of the race every year, or there certainly used to be, about how the money is going to be shared out, and that's sort of enshrined in the way the World Championships works as far as a lot of the men's teams are concerned. But what's it like in?
I remember, again, we talked about this last year, and there was some in Innsbruck in the build up to that road race. There was talk of that, but I can't actually remember. It'd be worth asking that question about. They're not always transparent about that, are they? About how they give riders bonuses for at the Worlds, but it'd be worth asking that question, whether that's a factor, and I suspect it probably is. But, you know, ultimately, and Lionel made this point earlier, winning the world title is going to be worth a lot more than whatever bonus you get from your federation.
But I do think it varies massively from nation to nation. I mean, I know when Mark Cavendish won in 2011 in Copenhagen, there wasn't any bonus from the British, British Cycling. And he had made arrangements privately with teammates about, well, we, infamously, he became,
watches,
he
cars,
became like a second-hand car dealer in the months that followed the Worlds. We were calling, well, we still call him Cav Motors, because he was just distributing, you know, I bought him a Porsche, I bought him a Renault, and the whole team got a car out of it, pretty
who
much.
Got, no, David Miller but got a Porsche.
Who got a Renault?
Steve Cummings got a car, Jeremy Hunt got a car. Wiggins got a Lambretta, I think. So, but... But
was Cummings late coming up with a water bottle, and he only got a Fiat 500?
I'm not sure. But as I say, in the Italian team, it's always been it's almost a tradition, and this meeting always takes place on the night before the Worlds, where they all sit, and it's often been very, very contentious.
But the Italians are often the team that where that question is thorniest, isn't it? Because they seem to have the most problems working together as a team. I mean, they've got lots of other riders from other nationalities working for them as well. But but it seems, I mean, I don't know if it's part of that Italian, I don't want to, you know,
be
in a whole nation.
It was a big issue when Italy were the dominant nation in the world. I mean, up until a few years ago, teams could have, the most powerful countries would have 12 riders. I think it was 12 at its peak, or maybe 13 if you also had the defending champion.
And or 45 in the case of Italy.
But, and you know, they were the generally the strongest nation. I mean, I would be very intrigued to know what's happening on that score in the Belgian team, for example, particularly when you've got the interests of Lotto Soudal and De Koninck, two big Belgian teams represented in that team.
And, you know, I was at an event last night where we were talking about the strength again, and it's sort of a bit a similar scenario to the women's road race, where you've got one really team that's really much stronger than all the other teams. And I guess the Belgian team this year is that team in the men's race, but in the Dutch team you've got Matthew van der Poel as the obvious kind of leader. But does that mean necessarily that the other Dutch riders are going to work for him and help him? Does he need that, because he's not had an awful lot of team support in all his major wins so far?
What happens with the French, Francois?
You mean with the women, or
no? Well, just I mean, there are stories from the French team as well about this kind of thing, aren't there? The kind of skullduggery intrigue, and
I mean, the system you described about you know, deciding who's the leader, and you know, I mean, in the men's team this season, I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever who the leader was. It was a problem last year, you know, when Julien Alaphilippe realized in the middle of the words that he was not in great shape, and Pinot had worked very hard for him, and you know, had he known beforehand that, you know, Alaphilippe was on a bad day, he might have ridden it differently. And finally, Bardet was second, so which proves that, you know, the plans that you can make before the race, especially on, once again, with such long courses and different, again, formats of racing from the ones they're used to during the year, make things a little bit different. It'll be very interesting to see how the Belgians ride this year, because of, well, exactly of what you said. Who's going to be in the best shape? Who's going to sacrifice himself and go in the leading group? You know, because they always do in the first half of the race. There's always a major contender in the break. I mean, that's but in the French camp this year, I mean, Alaphilippe is the, you know, undisputed leader. The team has been built around him. He got two De Koninck Quickstep teammates in the team, you know, specially dedicated to help him out. So it's the only option. There's no other option. So
what about the cash, the pognon?
I think that Tommy Vogler is the new team captain for France. When you've got a leader like Alaphilippe, it's been decided from the start, and the team has been entirely built around him. Like, you have two teammates from the Koninck Quickstep. You have this guy and this guy to help you out in the first half. This guy to protect you, and this guy to go in the break. Everybody has got its designated role, so it's exactly the same setup as in the World Tour team. You know, you, of course, Alaphilippe, if he wins, will get the most money. But the rest of the in the rest of the positions, since there's no kind of competition for the number one job, I think they'll all get the same bonus.
I hope Vogler's not doing the tactics for Alaphilippe, because then we'll see Alaphilippe riding last for the first 100 kilometres and then launching a stupid solo attack with 150 to go.
Well, it might
with his tongue out.
Who knows? It might be the way to beat the Belgians, you know. Who knows?
Very, very speculation heavy, this podcast, isn't it? We should wrap things up, because we're going to end the podcast, but then take questions from you guys. So, should we wrap things up there? Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Francois.
Thanks.
And thank you, everyone.
You've been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.